everybody. Welcome to a Monday edition Bulldog Hour. Kevin Russ alongside here as always until 3. CG will come up, bring you to 6 o'clock. I'll join Christopher as always during his show on a Monday at 3:30 for a little bit of transition work. He'll return the favor around 2:35 on Wednesday. And then Friday, as always, at 3 o'clock, we'll try to get to the rest of your emails. We probably won't, but we always give it a shot in the email hour. For us today, play-by-play-wise, Sharks will get started about an hour and a half over on 790. They are on the East Coast in Florida, and so Sharks fighting for a playoff spot, and we'll get that with Dan Rusinowski, the drop of the puck just after 4. On the Big Stick on 940, the Lakers and the Warriors tonight from Staples, and the Lakers still without LeBron. He's being reevaluated. You might have just heard the update with Christine Lisi on the network. What she did not mention, I think most Laker fans know it at this point, severe ankle sprain in Houston for Ball, and he is now out. So the Lakers without LeBron, without Rondo, and without Lonzo. And the only problem is the Warriors are rolling in on a 7-game winning streak, and DeMarcus Cousins actually played very well at that same venue on Friday, which now brings up the question, can the Warriors, given the nightlife in Los Angeles, survive 5 straight nights in L.A.? Because that's how long they have been there now, because they got their day in front of the Friday game to play the Clippers at Staples. They were there over the weekend, and I'm sure, you know, one of the things about it, you say, well, they can get in trouble in L.A. Most of them own homes down there, like Kevin Durant has his new digs in Malibu, which was a paltry $12.3 million or whatever, and they usually hang out all summer long. So if the Warriors are going to get in trouble, they could do it in a night. They don't need 5 nights, but we'll see. They look pretty good on Friday, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later in the week. But first, want to bring up our great friend and always a Monday visitor, Voice of Your Bulldogs, Paul Leppler, to talk not only about Fresno State, but a little bit about Paul George, who had 31 today, again in a win for the Thunder at Madison Square Garden. It's MLK Day, of course, and anytime you're honoring Martin Luther King Jr., remember what he stood for, obviously, but also realize that it is very important to the National Basketball Association, and it means national television all day long, NBA TV early, and TNT has a triple header, which culminates with that Warrior-Laker game. All right, let's talk about Paul with Paul, and then we'll get to Fresno State. So let's bring up Paul Leppler right now. Paul, how you doing?
Hey, doing great, Tony. I don't know about you, but I love these days where the sun's out and there's a mix of clouds, and, you know, you could just watch the sky for hours and be entertained because the ever-changing lighting and just the natural beauty. You see the mountains in the distance, and reminds you how special a place this is to live, besides all the great people.
No doubt about it, Paul. No question. And I was just mentioning to Russ that I just got back. I'd emailed you a couple of times just outside the French Quarter where the natives were not exactly delighted last night. I know Christopher's going to talk about this, Paul, but you have any thumbnail, any word of sympathy, and I have to be careful about this because I know there are Ram fans around, and I saw a lot of them in New Orleans, but are they a very fortunate group, in your opinion, or a very deserving group? I'll let you get in trouble before I have Panish and those guys email me. Just your take on yesterday.
I think that's the problem. We'll never know. I mean, it's very possible that the Saints could have first and goal and the Rams stop them 4 downs in a row and win it, and nobody's talking about it. But because of what happened, you have this unanswered question, and the only thing you know is that it was a horrendous no-call, that absolutely it should have been not just one flag but multiple flags, and it very well could have changed the outcome of the game. So, I mean, the whole reason we all watch sports is to see it decided by the players on the field. And when you have the officials miss an opportunity to get it right, it takes away from that. So I understand people's frustration and their anger, and maybe there will be some rule changes as a result because, you know, when you see that happen, it makes you scratch your head. And it also pours, you know, fire on the fuel that's already there of people who, you know, look at conspiracies. And they say, well, of course, from a ratings perspective, the NFL wants L.A. and Boston, not Kansas City and New Orleans. I mean, you've got millions and millions and millions more viewers in those two markets. So, that, you know, so then it feeds those kind of things. And you don't need that either. ultimately, one team was deprived of an opportunity to win it right there, and the other team was deprived of the opportunity to really earn it and erase all doubt. So that's disappointing, and hopefully in the future they find a way to fix it.
That's very well said, and I will tell you this, okay? First of all, for Rams fans, who all know I'm a 49er fan, the Rams have nothing, nor do their fan base have anything to apologize for. Wasn't the Rams' fault, okay? It was a blown call and Falls' fault, and I know CG's going to talk about this a lot today, but the one thing I did want to touch upon, because people that have been listening over the years know, we have been banging the drum on every show we've done about everything in regard to replay is subjective anyway. So it has been folly to say, and goodness knows we've said this enough over air, to say, well, you know what, we don't want pass interference as part of your challenges because it's subjective. So is whether a guy caught the ball or not. So is whether somebody fumbled it or not. It's a matter of opinion when it's close, and you may have somebody in the replay booth who disagrees. But the biggest thing when people say, well, you know, we didn't want replay for pass interference because then you're just reviewing it with somebody in the booth who has the same objective as the guy in the field, with one critical difference. The guy up in the booth has slow motion replay or replay period to fall back on. If you really want to make it fair, then let the guy who made the call watch it under the peep show, as we used to talk about, and let him make the decision. Because I'll tell you right now, you had an official yesterday who feels as bad as anybody about it, because they told Sean Payton right afterward from the league office, we blew it. In fairness to the Rams, wasn't their fault, and New Orleans did get the football with a chance. Because I know what New Orleans is saying, Paul, and you know this. They're saying with a buck 41 to go, if that's called correctly, all we have to do is kneel on it two times. The Rams have one stoppage. Third down, our kneel down will run it down to 3 or 4 seconds. We call timeout. We have a chip shot to win the game. That's probably almost assuredly what would have happened. But what you can't deny in New Orleans, and they don't want to talk about it right now, is the fact that the Saints did get the football back, as opposed to the Chiefs, where D. Ford has to live with lining up offside when he had nothing to do with the play, the interception, nothing. He could have left the field of play, and that caused New England to end up ultimately being able to get to OT, lead with the flip of the coin, and Pat Mahomes, as opposed to Drew Brees, never got on the field in overtime, which, by the way, has to be changed. But that's enough of that. Okay. I want to ask about Paul George when we talk about Fresno State. Paul had an email last week we didn't get to. There's a stunner. About whether Russell Westbrook sucks so much of the oxygen out of the building for the Thunder on a national sense that Paul George can't win the MVP because of it. He is playing MVP caliber ball. Paul George right now may be the best two-way player at the moment in the league. He and Kawhi Leonard are probably there side by side. But, Paul, because he has Westbrook next to him, does it mean that he doesn't get the credit he deserves, particularly playing in less-than-glamorous OKC? Or can you see the Bulldog of past years winning the MVP this year?
Well, you know, we'll see how he finishes. But, yeah, absolutely, I can say it. And you know, you put that description on him, the best two-way player. Well, it's a two-way game. I mean, both sides count.
Tell James Harden that.
Both sides defend the tied games. And I think that's what sets him apart. Where's the weakness? What is he not doing? He's certainly not one-dimensional. And he's getting better and better. And it's so fun to see, because that injury was devastating. And he came back more quickly than a lot of people would have, and more quickly than anyone expected him to be. And I think some people thought, you know, the level that he played at right after that was as good as it was going to get. And to see him proving that wrong, and to showing people just how special he is and how impossible he is for the opposition to deal with. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy, and I'm just really, really happy for Paul with the season he's having. And like I said, we'll see how he finishes up. He'll certainly be in that discussion, and if he finishes as strongly as he started, I think he'll have a good chance of walking away with it.
Yeah, fair enough. By the way, to William, just emailed in and said, don't forget Pat Mahomes did have a chance to win the game at the end of regulation, settle for the field goal. Fair enough. Okay, that is well said. I was talking about overtime only. Boy, the nerves are raw in Kansas City and in New Orleans. Paul, Fresno State over the weekend, to get back to the general and main topic at hand for us and general topic for the station, of course. The Bulldogs played a game that in years gone by would have gotten away from them, much like what happened at Utah State. Yet again, defense travels, and Fresno State's ability to keep Boise State within hailing distance, much like they did at Utah State, ultimately, Paul, and this time wasn't quite at the wire, led the Bulldogs to get that offense together, make some threes, and win. Was there any point that you thought that they were not going to be able to do it Saturday, or given what happened in Logan, did you say, hey, I've seen this movie before?
Well, I think one thing that we've seen a time or two is this coaching staff's ability to adjust, to get a feel for a game, to not panic, and to take advantage of timeouts and especially halftime to make significant changes that, you know, sometimes fix whatever the problem was. And Boise State's 2-3 zone, Fresno State was not having success against it. The Bulldogs weren't finding the right ways to attack it. Shots weren't falling. They were really struggling. And, you know, when you go a whole half and neither Braxton Huggins or Deshaun Taylor has scored, you know something's going wrong. And then, you know, they don't have Noah Blackwell at all for the second half, but right, those two seniors step up. The whole team stepped up. And I think it's really impressive, the resilience of this team. There's a confidence that these young men have that's instilled in them by their coaching staff, and a belief in each other that really, I think, prevents them from ever giving up or feeling like the game's gotten away from them. And if you look at it, they haven't been out of a game this year. You know, they haven't had one of those games where they knew they had no chance. And when you keep this team in position to do it, I think they trust each other enough. They communicate well enough with the coaching staff. And, you know, there's some key guys who have been there and done that and have experience. And that's what hit me, the clutch factor. You know, the timing of big shots made by Huggins and Taylor down the stretch. Really impressive. And to see New Williams really shoot himself out of his slump.
Right.
And we're seeing more and more of his supreme athletic ability. I mean, looking at the replay, he got robbed on the block that I think they called it a goaltend because they said there's no way somebody his size should be able to do that, and it probably hit the backboard first. It didn't, and that was a phenomenal play, and very few people, especially his size, could make that play. But it just shows you that he's taking steps forward, hasn't reached his full potential yet. I think about a guy like that, and I look ahead to next year, and I said, okay, next year, I bet we're going to see New Williams attacking the basket with a right-hand dribble from time to time and really work on the mid-range jumper and be able to pull up off the dribble and knock that down. If you add those elements to his game, you know, kind of the way Tyler Johnson did late in his career,
right,
how dangerous could New Williams be? And with this coaching staff and the way they excel, I think, at developing individuals, but especially the way they excel at taking that group of individuals and making them the most effective as a team, it's pretty exciting to think about what the future holds.
Well, there's no doubt, and for the presence, I mean, first of all, we saw again that with Nate Grimes, number one, sometimes the stat sheet doesn't tell the story about how critically important he is. If you look across the stat sheet, you see a guy who played 31 minutes and had 7 points. He had 8 boards and was a defensive presence and was absolutely critical. That and the other thing that doesn't show up, and every time I see it, I'm more and more impressed, and that is, and we talk about the NBA swagger you have to have. Paul, there is nothing that evidently does anything to hinder Deshaun Taylor's confidence. It does not matter how things are going for him. He wants the ball in the big moments. You know, he's only 1-for-4 from three, but it was a very important three, and a little, everybody be quiet now, and I'm glad he didn't get the tee because of it. But his confidence is something that I think carries this team, even when his stats aren't the greatest. He is just that intangible that this team with him has a chance to do great things. Without him, Paul, I'm not so sure that March is going to be great for him. But if he's healthy, I think they have the one guy that they know has an unwavering belief that this team can win on the floor at all times. That's got to help Hudson and company a great deal to have Deshaun out there all the time.
Yeah, and you know, the 4 games they played without him, you saw the first three, they didn't miss a beat. But when they got into a game that was slowed down a little bit, the other team figured out a way to limit Fresno State's transition points, and it turned into a half-court game against a, a bigger, physical, more experienced team, they really missed his ability to attack that defense, to get to the rim, to finish, or get himself to the foul line. It's something that's never going to go away for him. But what's interesting is some of that trademark confidence that you talk about, or maybe just the game mindset, seemed to be missing from DT in the first half on Saturday. And credit to the coaching staff or whoever recognized that and said, okay, let's check in with DT and see what's going on and make sure he's himself. Because there were times in that first half he didn't look like himself. And what we saw in the second half was vintage Deshaun Taylor that we've seen for 3 years. So as long as that guy is there and feeling up to it, you're right. It's a nightmare for the opposition. They know that that's something that's an option that Fresno State can go to at any point, and it's a proven weapon as far as getting victories.
The other thing is you and I had talked after the Nevada game, and I'm not saying that the free throw shooting, which was uncharacteristically bad by guys who are normally good free throwers, including Deshaun, I'm not saying it cost him the game, but it certainly didn't help. You and I talked about not only missing percentage-wise, but missing the front ends of one-and-ones. But 10 of 12, critically important, and Taylor had a quiet but effective 15, and a lot of that had to do with the 6-for-6 from the line. Paul, we've mentioned this with a guard-oriented team and a guy like Bittner who shoots them well. Fresno State should always be somewhere in that 75 to 80% range at the line, and it's critically important they stay that way. They also know where the ball belongs late. This is the other thing that, that Taylor takes upon himself. Down the stretch, this thing got a little more comfortable than people expected, winning by 10, but I have to ask you what it means for tomorrow night. You know how important this is for Hudson. It's important for the team to win. Do you think everybody gives it a little bit extra for the coach tomorrow? I mean, is that fair to say, or are they just laying it out there anyway?
Well, I think they're getting that kind of effort night in, night out, and that's what you love. But I think for the fans, there's a little extra there. I mean, think about it. This is the team that ended Fresno State's season last year. This is the team that really, if you look at the last decade, has been the best program in California. This year, you know, Fresno State has the chance to make that statement. The Bulldogs were the best college football team in the state this school year. And I think this basketball team has a realistic chance to prove the same. I mean, USF is having a great year in the WCC. You know, St. Mary's will be in the mix. None of the California Pac-12 schools are tearing it up on the hardwood. And, you know, here's your chance to make that statement, your first chance. And with a head coach who recruited a lot of those players on the San Diego State team, who knows them very well, but knows and loves the guys he has playing for him now. So there are a lot of subplots to it, but I think the bottom line is keep the momentum going. Continue to win. Continue to make yourself a championship contender. And, you know, I had a chance to watch most of the Nevada game because our game was so early Saturday, and Air Force went into Lawler and had a realistic chance of winning that game. Don't let the final margin fool you, because the call started going Nevada's way with about 8 or 10 minutes left, and Nevada was able to pull things away. But Air Force really gave Nevada fits. And if you end up catching Nevada on a night where the outside shots aren't falling, you're going to have a very good chance to steal a game from the Wolfpack. So that game is still out there in late February, and some real tough challenges in between. But the, you know, the team that's shown that resilience, that adaptability, really unfazed by tough road environments, those are the kind of teams that win championships. You can't be a championship team if you don't defend your home floor against a program that has been the standard in the conference and one that, you know, you've had some great battles against and beat twice in the regular season last year. I expect Fresno State absolutely to be dialed in and focused for this game. And, you know, realistically, try to find a way to negate some of what look like matchup advantages for San Diego State. And, you know, how are you going to tweak those matchups to work it into your favor? Because there's some real talent on the Aztecs, including the current Mountain West Player of the Week, Jalen McDaniels, who was a nightmare for this conference last year and came on stronger and stronger down the stretch. So you're going to see some phenomenal athleticism on display at the Save Mart Center tomorrow night. And, you know, when the school makes it so easy for you to go with 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas for $49 in what might be one of the most entertaining games in the Save Mart Center all year long, boy, I sure wouldn't miss it.
you know, you're right about that, Paul, on all fronts. One is we've talked about, and we saw it a little bit against TCU, the Bulldogs are undersized, though they have not been hurt on the boards the way we feared they would, but a singular matchup with a guy like McDaniels can be a problem for you. So, and it is all about matchups because on paper, obviously, the Bulldogs are a better basketball team, but individually speaking, that is one of the issues that they're going to face, and they don't have the greatest size to deal with that, though Grimes is an outstanding defender, and I'm sure that Rojas is going to get some minutes. But the other thing you're talking about the crowd for tomorrow, you know, I asked a couple minutes ago, would the team give a little bit extra? Like you said, they're pretty much tapping out at 100% right now. There's always a little bit more emotion when you know there's something for the coach at stake or an individual player. But, Paul, it's an 8 o'clock start, national TV on a Tuesday. That has been a recipe for people to stay home. They can make a difference by coming out tomorrow. So I think you're very right in saying, is there something that can be a little bit extra and a boost? That would be those that actually show in the stands. And I know you're not going to see 10,000, but you want to hazard a guess with that deal, the 4-for-4 deal, what you might see?
Well, you know, the Nevada game was close to 9,600, and I realized that was a Saturday and it was a little earlier. And Tuesday, 8 o'clock, there are reasons that is difficult for folks with young families. But, you know, on the flip side of that, it's over in a couple hours. You know, if you're here in town, you can be back home by 10:30, and you can get those kids right to bed. And like I said, I mean, you're going to see some outstanding athleticism. The speed and leaping ability you'll see in this game is right up there with any game you could find in the country. And the stakes are high. I mean, Fresno State can tie Nevada for first place if the Bulldogs win that game tomorrow night. And not to mention all the history between Fresno State and San Diego State. So, you know, I think we've got a great chance of seeing 7,500, 8,000, maybe even 9,000 people there, because I think the word is getting around. People know how good this team is. I mentioned, you know, maybe the best team in the state, and maybe down the road they'll play USF or St. Mary's. Those are the only two California teams who have a better net ranking than the Dogs right now. That's the new metric the NCAA will use this year for the tournament. Right now, Fresno State's net is 64. That's highly respectable, right on the bubble. And with the new system, you get bonus points for winning by double digits. So for the Bulldogs to win by double digits on the road Saturday, that's as good of a play as you can make, as good of a hand as you can be dealt if you're playing a card game. And for the Bulldogs to pull that off, especially when they were down 6 at the half and couldn't find ways to put points on the board, again, just what a testament to this coaching staff and the resilience of these young men.
No doubt about it. The other thing, Paul, I didn't think anybody for 40 minutes could get away with playing zone against this Fresno State team, because you've got guys who can get in the middle of that zone, get in the gaps like Taylor, and it's a very capable three-point shooting team. We saw in the first half, though, if you're not making the threes, and like you said, Taylor might have been a little bit hesitant more than we've seen, that's where the coaching staff does come into play, because they did take that time at the half to adjust, and the Bulldogs really attacked it well in the second half. Do you think that might have dissuaded others from trying it? Was there a blueprint for 20 minutes that suddenly was thrown out by the time the second half ended at Boise?
Well, I guess, you know, if you're going to be really objective, you say, well, you can take the chance and play it, but don't stick in it too long, because this coaching staff's going to figure it out and these players are going to figure it out. And I think that was what the Broncos did. Maybe if they had been going, you know, into it and out of it more
right.
frequently, maybe, you know, the success would have lasted longer. But I think, you know, the other thing that is easy to overlook is the basketball IQ of these players. Obviously, the coaching staff's explaining things in a way the players can understand, but, you know, their intuition on the floor, their feel for how a game is going, their ability to get in the right place at the right time and then execute. It's been really impressive to watch. It's been really clean, impressive basketball for most of the season. And now, you know, I'd say the biggest concern going into tomorrow night, what's the status of Noah Blackwell?
Yeah.
Here you have a team that's had to play four games without Deshaun Taylor, had to play basically the first game and a half of conference without Braxton Huggins, and now you might have to play one of your biggest games of the season, one of the most, you know, high-profile home games, without a guy who's been really smooth and solid, a real good distributor, and a really capable shooter. So if Noah can't go tomorrow night, who's going to pick up that slack? And so far this year, you know, the track record of finding a way to do that has been pretty good.
And I'll tell you what, and you're well aware of it, Paul, the hamstring may be the most dangerous in regard to re-injury if you're not ready. You know, even the ankle, as much as an ankle sprain at times, and doctors will tell you this, can take longer to heal than a break, for goodness sake. It's possible sometimes to play through that ankle sprain, and you'll even be told, you know, the more you use it, the more it's likely to heal, particularly if the ligaments have stretched in a way that you've done it more than one time. Paul, but that hamstring, you can blow that thing up so that you're not going to see the court again for the rest of the season. So I would imagine that, and this is just my hunch, that it's problematic tomorrow with Blackwell. Would you guess that's the case?
Yeah, that's my assumption. But, you know, we'll see at the shoot-around tomorrow how he's doing. And you never know. These guys, like I said, have been really resilient. And you know, I don't think anyone's really noticed how banged up they've been. You know, you lose Deshaun for those four games, which would have been probably six or seven games had that part of the schedule not been so stretched out. I mean, he was out for a month, basically. You know, Debo Gray really hasn't been himself all year because of lingering back issues, and he hasn't been able to have the impact he knows he's capable of or they really expected him to have. You have the stuff with Braxton, and I think the knee was bothering him Saturday in Boise, but he played through that and hit some big clutch shots down the stretch. And, you know, don't forget what he's doing on the defensive side of the ball either. So you have all those issues, and now the situation with Noah, and you kind of wonder, well, who's next? But the beauty of it is this team doesn't bat an eyelash. And, you know, in that sense, it's somewhat reminiscent of that crazy baseball team we saw a decade ago where by the time they got to Omaha, if you didn't have an injury, you kind of wanted to create one so you could fit in with everybody else. And the way they just shake it off and move forward and find ways to win, it's so much fun to be around a team like that. So I hope there are a lot of people around them tomorrow night at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, you're right. We kidded Detweiler that he's the first guy to play brilliantly without a thumb, because that was the case. I mean, he had a thumb, Paul, that was, he couldn't have hitchhiked with it, let's put it that way. It was headed in the wrong direction. If it wouldn't have been for skin, I'm not so sure that thing would have stayed attached to his body. Is that fair to say?
And that's pretty much it, you know, but he's the rhino. He didn't care about it.
That's right.
Yeah. And then, you know, look what that did for his teammates, too, Tony. And you know, Mendoza was the same way. And there are guys, you know, the way Clayton Allison pitched on that team with a shoulder he knew was going to need surgery. It was everybody saying, you know, yeah, I've got some challenges. But this quest we're on, this team, the chance to play for each other, that means more. And I think this basketball staff has done a good job of really working on that mentality and getting people to buy in. You certainly saw it in football. I mean, that's Jeff Tedford's M.O. It's you know, it's not about him. It's not about any of his assistants. It's not about any individual player. It's about the team as a whole. And now, you know, with some defection on his staff, he's going to have to find guys who have that same mentality and will fit right in. But, you know, that's the secret sauce. Everybody always tries to figure out, why is this coach successful? Why is that coach successful? I think that's a pretty clear common bond when you look at the people who really have success sustained over time. They have that understanding that you're playing for something bigger than yourself. And, again, when you're around a team like that and you see it, it just makes everything that much more enjoyable.
We talk so often about Bum Phillips' line when he was coaching the Houston Oilers about Don Shula, and he said he can take his'n and beat your'n, or take your'n and beat his'n, which is the ultimate compliment to a coach. Jeff Tedford has that reputation after what's happened the last couple of years at Fresno State football-wise, and I know it's early in the basketball tenure of Justin Hudson, and this is his first go-around, where Teddy obviously was a proven winner when he arrived here. But, Paul, I know this. There are a lot of people down in San Diego, they're about ready to say the same thing about Justin Hudson that Bum Phillips said about Don Shula. You know, we knew this. When you go within conference, even though the people in San Diego, and look, Steve Fisher was on the air with us and was the primary advocate with that kind of credibility to say this young man is going to be a great coach. there are people in San Diego, Paul, lamenting this right now, which I guess is the ultimate compliment, right?
Well, yeah, and I'm sure they're all going to be tuned into this game because, you know.
Oh, no doubt.
From a bench perspective, it's Brian Dutcher against Justin Hutson. But neither one of those coaches will take a shot. They're not going to dribble the basketball. But it will be a very interesting chess match to behold. And, yeah, every time the Bulldogs go to San Diego, as long as Fresno State's been in the Mountain West with the Aztecs, that place is hopping. I mean, it is loud. It is imposing. It is a real bear to deal with. So it would be, you know, so heartwarming for these players to show up at the Save Mart Center and see the same kind of atmosphere in their favor. And if they haven't given you a reason to be there or be excited yet, you might want to look a little more closely because this has been some of the most impressive team basketball that a Fresno State team has played in a long, long time.
And we play the game of plus-minus you were talking about earlier, not on the court plus-minus, but the schedule. You do look at already on the road. You are an impressive and difficult venues, never mind the San Jose State game, but difficult venues, Boise and Logan, Utah. You are a plus-2 right there, and even your home loss was Nevada, which is a different issue, which I will ask you then, Paul. Taking Nevada now off of the schedule at home because you've already played it, I think there's a great probability Fresno State is not beaten at home the rest of the way in regular season conference play. If that is indeed the case, do you really like the Bulldogs' chances to be at worst the 2 seed in this conference going into the conference tourney?
That's a big if, Tony. But, yeah, if that if is satisfied, absolutely. I'll go down that. I took a mathematical logic and reasoning class one time, and that's you're just setting up one of those formulas for me. And yeah,
so did I at 7:30 in the morning one time, Paul. I'm not so sure I was aware what was going on until about 9, but yes.
So, yeah, it can be confusing. But, and, you know, well, I won't even get into to that. But, you know, if I accept that if, you know, there's another logical saying, if and only if, and I think I'll go with that. But that's a big if because look at who else is coming into the Save Mart Center. I mean, Utah State is a matchup nightmare for just about everybody in this conference. If you look at their game over the weekend, you know, Brock Miller is banging down threes and they have Keita inside who's able to alter shots and get putbacks. That guy's a future pro. I mean, if I'm an NBA scout, he's the guy in this conference that I am salivating over the most. And he's going to be in the Save Mart
Center. Great distributor of the ball, by the way, Paul. Not to interrupt you, but a terrific distributor. I mean, he is at 15 in the high post. He looks like Bill Walton looking around for people. I was really impressed by that when they played the Dogs.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I don't think Utah State used him as much as the Aggies could have in that game. And he is just a freshman, and that's part of it, I'm sure. But you see his physical tools, and you say, boy, how do we stop that? So he's coming to the Save Mart Center. You have the Aztecs tomorrow night. They've been the cream of the crop in this conference for so long. Boise State will be back with an eye at payback. That New Mexico team that pounded Nevada, the Lobos, will be coming to the Save Mart Center. So, and, you know, watch an Air Force. That is a tough team to battle. Just the way they play you, they can wear you down, and they have some weapons. They have some older physical guys in the front court that are going to be challenges for Fresno State. And if they take care of the basketball and don't turn it over, they can make it a close game just by the style that they play. So, I mean, I look at the rest of the home schedule, and there isn't a game on there that I say, okay, that's an automatic W. So if and only if that proviso is satisfied, I'll say, yeah, I think they're right there. And I think, obviously, you know, the dream scenario is that with 4 or 5 games left in the conference season and you make your way up to Reno, that you're within striking distance of the Wolfpack for the conference lead. And so far, so good in that department. So if they keep taking it one game at a time, one half at a time, because there have been some differences there, I think they're going to have a very good chance to pull something like that off. And come watch this team tomorrow night. I mean, 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas for $49. You can't get that deal at the movies or just about anywhere else. And, you know, these are young men who love each other, who play for each other, who want to see you there, who are going to make sure you know they appreciate you. And, you know, I'll say it again, just a real, real easy team to pull for because of the character of the young men and the way they play the game. If people love basketball, if people have been around basketball for a long time, you know how it is, Tony. There are teams you can watch and you say, I don't know how I feel about that. They score a lot of points, but I don't like the way they play. Or they don't play any defense. Or, you know, they don't do this. And I just can't believe that they don't have the basketball IQ. Well, this team has all those things. They do. I mean, yeah, they make mistakes. They're not perfect. But those things that a basketball purist is looking for, you can check all those boxes with this team. And I think if you come watch them, you're going to come back.
I would agree with you, Paul. And I'll tell you this, that if they are able to get to that two seed, it could very well be that rather than having to win the conference tournament, if they can get to the conference final for the first time, they might be in a position where they can make the NCAAs without having to win the tournament, and that is a real big deal, but I know that's long off in the distance. Since you brought up football, the last couple of things I want to ask you about here, Paul, in the few minutes we have to go, football-wise. One, quickly, any thought about KJ and the fact that he did not play, though he was there? Any feeling about it?
You know, I have not had a chance to talk to him or anyone around the program. I was, you know, out in Boise with the basketball squad.
Right.
So I haven't... I haven't talked to anyone to know the full story there or really be prepared to comment on it. I know that he represented himself and the school very well in practice. So, you know, I can understand people's disappointment that he wasn't out there hauling balls in for Marcus.
But, of course, it's not uncommon, and I'm not saying this is the case, not uncommon that if you're trying to be careful, much like we see guys skip bowl games, that you want to show your wares, but you know the combine, particularly for Keyshawn Johnson, is where he is going to show big, and you don't want to risk anything with that kind of stuff coming up. That may be the case. It may not be. I have not heard anything definitively either. The other thing is what you brought up. Well, you never want to minimize losing quality people, and obviously Kalen DeBoer is a quality guy, and he's going to be a head coach again someday at the D1 level for the first time, and I'm sure part of the move was to get to the Power 5. But you had he, Jamar Cain, et cetera. Are you concerned at all, or do you figure that much like Pat Hill, Teddy has that short list, both literally and figuratively that short list, the one Pat used to talk about he had on a notepad or in his head? And could it be Grubb is going to be staying as the coordinator?
Again, I haven't bothered Coach Tedford yet, and so I can't really speak with any kind of authority. But absolutely, he's got a short list, and, you know, and he's not afraid to go away from the short list. I think that's the thing. Some coaches, it's like, okay, if I ever have this opening, I have to give it to this guy because I've known him the longest, right, and I'm loyal to him. You look at when he hired Kalen DeBoer and Orlando Steinauer. I mean, he had no previous relationship with those guys. It was, hey, I have this feel for you. I realize you're not a me guy, and neither one of them are. If you spent some time with Kalen or Orlando, you see how humble, how genuine they are, how they have the right perspective. They're not just out there trying to push themselves forward. They're trying to be part of a successful winning team and learn in the process. And I'm sure both of those guys would tell you how much they've learned from Coach Tedford and from being a part of a program that's wired that way. So he's going to look at guys that are wired that same way with the same mentality that are going to, you know, enhance the chemistry of your program and not detract from it. So whether those are people already in the program, people who have been here before, you know, I know Coach Tedford well enough to know that he's not going to take it lightly. He's not going to sign off on something just because it sounds good or someone else told him. He's going to do his due diligence and sit down and ask some difficult questions that may not be asked in every job interview. And if he gets the right answers, then he'll pull the trigger. So, you know, it's a tough time with the second signing day coming up here very shortly. So we'll see how quickly they're able to fill those spots. But I guess from that standpoint, you're thankful that Fresno State was able to fill so many of those scholarships in the early signing period.
You're right, Paul. And as I let you go, you bring up a very cogent point here. And if you go back to when Jeff took the job, was formally announced here on Veterans Day back in 16, he kept his distance for those last couple of games, though he could have been very hands-on if he chose to. He had no preconceived notion, even of the guys on the staff that he knew. He did not come in and say to himself, you know what, I'm going to have to change the entire staff. Until He went ahead and vetted it, and only then, Paul, on an individual basis, did he look and say, you know what? Some of these guys I used to work with, I like them, but the culture has to change here. It wasn't something that he said he was going to do when he got here. It was what he saw, and I think that's exactly what happens now. That's what happened with Bert Watts, right? It wasn't, oh, Bert, someone who's on staff, I'm going to elevate him. What he saw, again, with a guy that he knew, was he was capable, and look what's happened. And I would imagine the same thing happens right now with Grubb or anybody else who's already on staff.
Yeah, and, you know, if it does end up being Ryan Grubb, I can say from my observation, he has as good a rapport with the players on that team as any coach on that staff. And you'd say, well, he's a position coach. Yeah, he's got a rapport with the linemen. No, he's got a rapport with the whole team. You know, and you can see that. He engages so well with young men of that age group. I think regardless of where they come from or, you know, what their last name is, he has a way of engaging with a wide spectrum of people. And, you know, if he's staying in this program, whether it's as the O-line coach or a coordinator, I think Fresno State is better off because of it.
You're right about that. Paul, appreciate it. I'm glad you guys are home. I really like this home road stuff. That's going to change very quickly, by the way. It's going to turn into back-to-backs on the road, back-to-back and home. But I do like the Saturdays, either home or road, and then to the road or home the next one. That's a nice way for the team to stay, I think, close to home and in rhythm. This is a very important game coming up, particularly when you have Colorado State and Wyoming on the road on the 26th and the 30th. So I hope you have a great one tomorrow and a terrific crowd, and look forward to you and Q at 7:15 with the tip-off show tomorrow. Take care, my friend.
Sounds good, Tony. See everybody at Save Mart Center tomorrow.
You got it, Paul. All right, guys. Paul Leffler will take a break, come back a little bit more, send you off to CG top of the hour. He'll bring you to 6 o'clock again, remind you in about 45 minutes the Sharks will get started 3:30 over on 790. Lakers and the Warriors tonight with John Ireland and Michael Thompson coming up 7:15, the pre on 940. Take a break on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. It's about 2:53, a few more minutes to go. Bulldog Hour, then we'll be off to CG and the Christopher Gabriel program till 6 o'clock tonight. I'll jump back in for a little transition work at 3:30. CG the same right around 2:30 on my show on Wednesday, and then we will be together for the email hour at 3 o'clock on Friday. As always, tdad1 at att.net, tdad, the number 1 at att.net, comes right to me, total anonymity, and right to the goodbye box, if you would like. Anytime we're finished with the email. And for CRISPR and myself, that means some of your emails may live on forever since we don't seem to get to them. That's completely my fault. It's never Christopher's fault. I want to make that clear right now. The other thing is, mentioned the Lakers and Warriors tonight. That game is also in TNT at 7:40 or 7:50 they're going to tip, but 7:15 for us, the pregame. And the Sharks will get started in a little over a half hour. They are on the East Coast to drop the puck as they try to make sure they make the playoffs and maybe a miracle run for the first ever Stanley Cup for your San Jose State Sharks. Your San Jose Sharks. I don't want to put that on the San Jose Sharks. San Jose State. You don't deserve that, Sharks. I'm telling you right now. Fine academic institution, San Jose State. Just not a very good athletic institution anymore. A couple of things here. One, our good friend Greg in the South Valley, when I brought up the Rams at the start, and Christopher, I'm sure, has a lot to say about this, understandably so. This is what I said, you can't blame the Rams, even as a 49er fan. Concede immediately, you cannot blame the Rams for a bogus call. Not their fault. They weren't cheating out there. You know, they aren't the Patriots. Sorry. They were on the field to play. Official misses a call. Greg, who is a big and longtime Rams fan, all the way back to Cleveland. That's how far Greg goes with the Rams. He goes Cleveland to L.A. to St. Louis, back to L.A. He was a personal friend of both Jane Russell and Bob Waterfield in the 50s. I'm sure of it. That's for you, Greg. He said, horrible call, so was the non-call on the face mask on Goff. He said anybody who's going to discredit the Rams' effort playing in a very difficult environment because of that pass interference call is just plain wrong. I agree with you, Greg, completely. And Greg went on to point out, from a Rams point of view, the Saints only scored 3 points after their TD drive started the third quarter, and they got the ball in OT, as we talked, coughed it up. I had some people ask, should that not have been pass interference? When the ball is like that, as Breeze was hit, they're not going to worry about whether somebody tipped it or not. That was a dying quail over the middle. If somebody shoves somebody to go after the ball, it's not pass interference because you're not trying to knock the receiver down to prevent him from getting the ball. You're trying to get to a path for the ball. That's why that wasn't called, and it shouldn't have been. He also mentioned that the Saints failed to stop the Rams in their final two drives, and I know that you mentioned, Greg, that Sean Payton totally mismanaged the clock in the final drive for the field goal. You're right about that, and a lot of people in New Orleans, after they are finished tearing a new one to the officials, turn their attention to Sean Payton. He mentioned the Rams should have been out of timeouts and little time left on the clock. You're right. Also, Belichick, incidentally, got away with it when KC only got the three because Belichick got that thing in the end zone too quickly just before giving Kansas City enough time to get back down the field. He got away with it. I thought they should have been a little more careful. You don't want to put it on the edge, but Patriots knew they could run it any time they wanted because the Chiefs were exhausted. They busted it right in the end zone. I'm not so sure Kansas City was trying all that hard to keep them out of the end zone toward the end of regulation. But you know what? Kansas City, tough break. New Orleans, tough break. Scott asked, going to be Boston and L.A. and the NBA as well? Don't know about that one, Scott, but you're right about football and baseball. That's for sure. This is KFIG Fresno.